Love in the 21st Century is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the bankruptcy law offices of Michael O. Hayes, a proud supporter of community radio. Michael Hayes offers free consultations and payment plans for Chapter 7 and 13 bankruptcies and has been serving Northern California residents for more than 30 years. The telephone number for Michael Hayes, spelled H-A-Y-S, is 892-8916 or at My Hayes Law. That's MHAYSLAW.com. Right, you are listening to Love in the 21st Century. Love in the 21st Century is a talk show with live call-ins, interviews, and discussions on the philosophical to practical look of love, from romantic relationships to connections with humanity, one-third dating insights, one-third self-love guide, and one-third compassion training. And my name is Brian Anthony Phoenix. I'm here with Adam Moe. Say hi, Adam.
Hi, Adam.
Perfect. All right. Our topic this month is loving the differences. And I'm going to go ahead and let Adam take us into this show with his insights and how he'd like to approach our conversation this evening.
Well, it just seems like eminently practical, because that's what we all are, is we have our uniqueness. That is the beautiful qualities that we all bring. And what else are we going to end up loving except, you know, that which is manifesting? So getting to love the differences, getting to love folks in their particular, in their own way, that's actually like almost like the entire practice, what we've always been talking about here for all these years, you know. So it's a wonderful springboard for new ideas and insights in this whole field. And then also it's a very practical kind of way to create or focus upon the happiness within one's own mind. So then what we're saying is, like, we all have these three capacities, these three existences, which make up our being, which make up our sense of being. And this is our body. We have a physical attribute. That's 22. We're talking through this mic now. Okay. Not that one, but this one.
Yeah.
It's about
right,
the same.
So we're going to take a pause real quick, just because we've got a little bit of static. So we're just going to see.
This one was okay. It was a little feedback.
Oh, okay. Yeah, a little bit of.
It sounded like a little ringy.
All right. Do you hear? Do you hear any static?
This one's a lot lower.
That one's
go up.
Okay, we'll go up. This is. This is how we do it. This is live, in real time, not pre-recorded.
Working with our technology we have here. And the question was, of our three existences we have, which make us up, that is to say, our body, our voice, like spirit, emotions, and our mind, which is the most fundamental.
Mm-hmm.
And then jumping to the head of the class, the answer is, of course, one's mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I do, Chinese medicine. Chinese medicine has a very different idea of where the mind abides. Different cultures have different ideas of mind and what it is and where it is to be found within the individual. But we, in our Western scientific, we always think, of course, mind is in the brain. That's exactly where mind is.
Right.
But it turns out to be problematic in terms of the actual, like, subjectivity, one's experience of consciousness, mm-hmm. being aware, turns out to not have any specific location.
Yeah.
So, might as well put it in other locations. it's just as arbitrary a designation. So, in Chinese medicine, we put it in the heart.
Mm-hmm.
And similar in the Tibetan idea, they say the mind is actually, you know, in the heart. And curiously, when you say, okay, where is your me?
Mm.
Where would you find me? And when you think me, you don't point to your head immediately. You point to the middle of your body.
Right.
So when we say, what's the most important, the body, the speech, or the mind, we mean your heart-mind. And we go on and say that if your real basis for loving, your real basis for your own sense of happiness is only derived from your physical situation, then of course it's going to be variable because that is always changing. Changing in little ways, you know, like improving when you're young, keep getting stronger, keep going further. And when you get older, it starts to diminish. And eventually, the physicality is going to fail.
Mm.
Similarly, as we have the vicissitudes of our karma returning in the life, sometime life is serving us, you know, beautifully, giving us what we need. Other times, quite the contrary.
Mm.
We don't have any control over that. I mean, we did when we were making the karma, but we've already done that.
Mm.
Now it's just coming back.
Could you briefly for a moment tell us what vicissitudes of karma is?
Vicissitudes is like a really crummy day.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be a crummy day, and crummy things could still keep happening.
Right.
How it is we're basing our sense of worth or our sense of capacity to love or our own happiness.
Mm.
If that's based on the external physical situations, then we're always going to get let down.
Mm-hmm.
So when we say, what's the most important, what's the chief, we say, of course, it's the heart-mind. It's one's own state of mind.
Mm-hmm.
And turns out that's something you can actually cultivate. That's something you can actually develop and work on. And in the real sense, that's called equanimity.
Mm.
That means that we're not loving just like a mama bear. Mama bear has love for sure for her cubs. All of the mammals, you know, to one degree or another, demonstrate this kind of affection to their kids. But whoa is the person who interferes with that, tries to get in the middle of that.
Right.
And that's basic survival. That's how the mammals have come to dominate the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we are mammals. And we have mammalian instincts.
Mm-hmm.
But the other curious proof of this is how, compared to all the other mammals, we are physiologically defenseless.
Mm.
We don't have any inbuilt into our biology weapons.
Right, super sharp claws or...
teeth, we're wimpy.
Yeah.
We just gotta... and we're so, so long to develop, to be a mature adult. Of all the mammals, we take the longest.
Mm-hmm.
We are in the infantile stage, in the dependent stage, physically so much longer than any mammal.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to depend on love. We have to depend on the compassion of our caregivers. You know?
Mm.
So we have to learn to be uncompassionate. We have to genuinely go through some type of imposed external training,
right,
to adopt a bigoted attitude.
Right.
And
we're not born with that.
No. So anything you can learn, you can unlearn too.
Absolutely.
Because the natural basis is always there.
Mm-hmm.
Getting back to our first point, we're saying, what's more important, you know, body, speech, or mind? The mind is the chief. The mind is the most important. And the type of happiness that you can cultivate, that you can generate within your own heart and mind, is something that can become imperturbable.
Mm.
This I had no understanding of this, you know, some years back. It's been a development, you know, that I've encountered this and started to reinforce this in my own life. But obviously it's true. You know, if someone is made it to the top of the corporate ladder, they're in their luxury high-rise apartment, you know, and then they lost the job, the lover walks out on them, you know, it's the most beautiful flat in all of Manhattan, and all they're trying to do is stop themselves from jumping out the window. And
right.
it's the last financial crash, you know. Oh, they lost everything.
Yeah.
But they didn't. It's like they think because it's only the materiality is what they're identified with, oh, there goes my bank account. But it means all of my mental happiness goes as well. And I'm just trying to throw myself out of my beautiful deluxe high-rise balcony.
Yeah.
The opposite is the truth also, because I have teachers, Tibetan, in the Tibetan lineage, who endured the genocide that was perpetrated upon them in their native country.
Mm-hmm.
And similarly, even here, even in our own watershed, when Ishii surrendered, put himself at the mercies of the white man.
Yeah.
He completely changed his attitude. He was like, okay, yeah, if they're going to kill me like they killed all the rest of my tribe, you know, down to the last, very last one, then so be it. And he walked out there with his hair singed, which was that's the traditional funeral practice for mourning.
Right.
And then he was like, oh, they're not killing me. They want to try to communicate to me. They're feeding me. And he just went with them.
Right.
And served and was helping them to understand his culture, and had that friendly approach, and had happiness in his own mind.
Hmm.
So it doesn't matter what we are gaining or losing externally, physically, if we have some sort of unshakable balance, some way of returning to a more primary nature, then we genuinely have something to love from. which is not dependent on the external circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
So bring on the differences. Any sort of difference is negotiable. The love isn't just for those within my tight sphere and against those who oppose. It's going to be encompassing.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be able to open out in a more universal way.
Mm-hmm.
But it's in a more practical way in that sense for those reasons, for those points. And it's something that can be approximated. We're like strategizing and trying to develop a sense of giving and a sense of generosity,
mm-hmm.
Which we can learn and we can cultivate by degrees. And one joke they're saying, like, oh, so tight-fisted, you know, really can't, hard to give to anyone. You could practice by giving from your right hand to your left hand. Oh, yeah, you're giving it. Here, you can have that. And then you can give from your left hand to your right hand and just practice that, moving it, sending it out.
Hmm. Yeah, I think that's a really profound thing to say. I mean, to me, that kind of sparks the self-love piece, you know? And that's sometimes that's where the best place to start is loving the differences within, you know?
That's right.
And then, you know, if it's super hard to love the people around you because you see all the, you know, the more negative or destructive or not serving aspects of humanity that are represented in either your local or larger circle, then maybe it's time to kind of address the you and be like, okay, if I feel like I can't give that much love out right now to this craziness around me, what's going on here in my hands?
and we'll go for the deep end here.
Mm-hmm.
Because love yourself and love your selflessness.
Mm, mm-hmm.
Because we encompass both.
Mm.
And one of the keys, I think, to self-love is understanding selflessness and not being afraid of, you know, not making it seem selflessness is in opposition to the relative experience of having a self.
Right.
So self-esteem is something, again, you can cultivate. So important. So important. And, oh, you know, I never got enough love or acceptance from my parents or, you know, my society, my culture, whatever. We blame for the lack of self-love. It's always somehow deficient. But then you just forgive. You just ultimately, these people who raised, these people whose tribe, you know, I integrated with, they had their own limitations.
Mm-hmm.
They had their own hardships, you know, and their own programming and fears. So then, ultimately, gotta forgive them, give them love, and find what it is, you know, that really floats your boat. What it is you're able to do in the world and receive the sense of satisfaction from yourself. When I do that, feels good.
Mm-hmm.
And you just go ahead and go that way and build that up within yourself.
Mm.
It might not, it doesn't have to be major. It doesn't have to be, you know, unbelievable. It's just something that's practical that you can do, that you're feeling good about, and bit by bit you're developing sense of self-worth, sense of self-esteem. And then when we really look at the situation and we say, like, how we are derived through our interconnectedness, we see that the illusion of a separate, independent self that exists only by itself in isolation is a full-on illusion, And this idea of, you know, building up a big ego, that would mean that, you know, if that equates with happiness, if I have the flip side, you know, a narcissist is like only self-love, only self-cherishing. And that becomes bigger and bigger. Then, of course, the big egos would have the happiest of lives, the most smooth sailing. And that's, of course, not the case.
Nope. This is not the case. It's interesting that we that you say that, because it's like, you know, if you want proof of things, right, the proof is in the observation of what is a result of the actions. And we see, you know, there's definitely, I believe there's images and stories in our society about having a big ego and that being successful, like to get to a place of quote unquote success. But like you said earlier, that success can be very much like a house of cards, because as soon as that material stuff that it was built on is away, it's like, you know, you might as, you know, some people will end their life as a result of that. And so, you know, I just brought that up because like the, it's interesting to see how everything has a natural mechanism, and we can see what actually really happens when we really observe what happens when the ego gets inflated. Because I know in my own life that happened, and I got humiliated, and now I realize that I have a I have like an opportunity to either be humble on my own, or I get humiliated. Like that's kind of like Mother, universe, the laws, nature will kind of, you know, kick in and say, "All right, dude, you're getting too big for your britches."
So I'll just deflate my britches while I can do it, you know, creatively.
Yes,
Mother Nature doesn't have to intervene so much.
I was wondering if you might be interested, and we can do this a little bit later if it's more in your flow, but I just wanted to make an earmark. I'd be curious about your insights on equanimity and action, in that, you know, when I speak about this concept to other folks, especially in the realms of social media, regarding social change and, you know, the ideas that people can change the world by basically mainly being equanimous and being accepting and working on their individual peace, you know, I definitely hear a lot about, well, what about when things need to be done? Like, what happens when we need to march in the streets and we need to, you know, like that kind of piece. So I'm just wondering if you might be able to speak to how being equanimous is still incorporated in proper action and what that looks like.
Yeah, I think it's natural. I think that's the way that genuine change, you know, lasting change comes about. And we're saying like how the society, you know, if you're measuring yourself or your sense of self-worth from the external manifestations and from the messages we're getting from societal norms, then it's delicate. But when you have that imperturbability in your sense of equanimity, that's going to be the natural, say like the womb. It's where things can grow and gestate and be birthed into the world. And it's not like, oh, it's going to happen out of this reflexive kind of action, you know, oh, they did that bad thing, so we'll do this, you know, to counter that. But the deep peace, the deep social changes have always been like mushrooms. They're growing, the mycelial body is growing massively underground or in the tree. We don't see it. And that's going on. And then up there comes a little fruiting body. Something comes out, and it has its manifestation. But it's because there's been this widespread, you know, deep change that's happened in society. And I think that's happening quicker now. We have a quicker feedback loop in terms of our social media, of how those changes look. And it's up to us. You know, we develop that inner sense of calm, inner sense of self-love, and capacity to love others without bias, then the actions that we're going to take are going to have the sustainability, the lasting effect. They're not in reaction to, they're in response to, you know, something very natural, a next step that happens in our social development as the mammals who are the dominant species. Mm-hmm. We think, we believe.
Right.
But we definitely got to wake that stuff up pretty darn quick by putting it into action. So I really appreciate your question.
Absolutely.
That's such an important piece of it.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, I align with that perspective very, very much. And that's how I've been understanding and seeing it. And that is, I totally have much love, respect, and honor for all the people, especially right now, who are getting fired up about what's going on in our world. And I understand the anger and the manifestation of that and the desire to act upon that. And I also can see how, like what you just said, the sustainability piece of how that movement's going to work, whether it's an immediate kind of violent reaction of, like, you know, like a bottle rocket, you know, launching off strong and then exploding and then fizzling into question mark, you know, as a result to a more strong, sustained, you know, authentic kind of movement.
And that has to do with, I think also, this is, you know, the other side, the relations between the sexes, that there's the yang aspect of dynamic change and moving in the world in a strong, definite way. And then the yin quality of receiving and being supportive and working in this gestation, you know, bringing to birth something which in essence has a life of its own. Mm-hmm. Like the real social movements that have been successful were something that took on a life of their own, and then became incorporated in our society. And I'm really hopeful. I'm really, you know, so excited to be on this edge, you know, looking at this situation that we have in a honest way, and understanding that we all have the capacity, we all have the inner resources to do this.
Absolutely.
You know, we all can do this, guys. It's
yes,
cool.
We can definitely. So we're already halfway through our show. You're listening to 90.1 FM, 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. You're listening to Love in the 21st Century here with Brian Anthony Phoenix and Adam Mose. Adam Mose has been speaking to some really amazing insights, and we have more to come. I just wanted to say that we would love for you to join the conversation. If you're interested in terms of if you have questions or comments for either one of us, Adam is such a great community resource. So if you want to take advantage to ask him a question while we're on the air, someone else might be interested in what you have to say. You can call in 530-895-1114. That's 895-1114. Where are we moving to now, Adam?
Well, while you're rushing to your telephone, I thought I'd just go way, way out there with some poetry. This is right off the bat, kind of like, ask not why the bird doth fly in the sunset sky, calling out in its ancient cry. Rather, why does your sky abide in your mind so wide, so loving, so deep, that not only one heart can keep a view so pure and a path so good, a path and a destination to your own neighborhood. Let's breathe the blissful life into being with your clear way of seeing.
Wonderful.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's a way of seeing. Just a way of seeing things.
Absolutely. Yeah, poetry is such a great gift in that sense. You know, just a wonderful way to weave words and create some pictures and perspectives. So, continuing the loving the differences conversation and equanimity. We just before we had our little halfway point, we're talking about, you know, some of the things at large and reacting from a place of equanimity. Do you have any practical insights that people can start doing to start cultivating this? In terms of, you know, what does it look like in a simple daily practice to start building this kind of stillness from which to just be?
Well, we were mentioning about this idea of it's a lived practice, you know, so the life which you're engaged in, and one idea we were landing on was this self-esteem, positive self-regard, and engaging in things that you feel good about doing. You know, it's like wholesome activities, and you sleep better at night. If you're engaging in something that's you know, in some small way contributing, then, you know, you just feel better. It just feels more at ease in your own hide. So that's like the intelligent part of morality, that it's not some external morality that's imposed by society or by your group, but it's like from inside. I engage in this and I know it's going to have something beautiful, some positive result, and I'm getting better at it. Then that good feeling comes inside, and you have more of a basis for working with your mind. It starts to relax. So it's like the first bit of meditation, I was like, when I was reading Buddhism for the first time, it's like, I want to skip to the meditation part. I want to skip to the wisdom part, you know, just like, oh, where's the insight? Where's the insight? And it always starts with ethics. And this kind of basic ethical behavior, which isn't crazy, noble, exalted. It's just, you know, the next step that seems like, oh, okay, I gotta just go ahead and like do some good things. You know, it's simple. The next good thing that comes up that I can do, I'll just go ahead and do it and not interrupt myself or try to talk myself out of it, or just, you know, go ahead and do it. It's a good thing. Afterwards, I feel good about it, and I have more of a sense of peace in my own mind. And that starts to become, it's like a little muscle exercise. And then from that, a little side effect also of feeling good from your good actions is you start to generate this good stream of karma, and positivity comes back.
Absolutely.
And it's not like we have to have that positivity coming back, because the original point we were saying is the vicissitudes of life are going to be coming and going, and that's not where we have to hang our happiness. That's not what we're dependent upon. So that's the next step, is like, once there's some positive self-worth feeling and some peace of mind in general about the life, then we can think about, oh, you know, cultivating a peace of mind And this idea that we're going to fight for peace, you know, or that police officers are called, you know, what are they? Protectors of the, you know, officers of the peace. They're called peace officers.
Right.
How can you officiate something that you don't have a personal experience of, you know? So it's like we should all very much, you know, it's hard work. That's very hard work.
Right.
Enforcing the laws.
Absolutely.
You know. Is essential, but at the same time, wonderful name, wonderful concept, being a peace officer. But genuinely, you got to have to know what peace is in some case, you know, because you have a lot of weaponry to enforce it.
Absolutely,
which is in no way peaceful. Generating the love, generating the compassion, and having a basis of imperturbability, it makes your action less clouded. You know, there's less of the superimposition of one's prejudices on situations. So you're seeing situations more clearly, and your actions can be more effective. That's one of the wonderful side effects of developing a more ongoing practice of familiarizing yourself with peace. And where it does, that doesn't have to be mystical or esoteric. It's also like what activity you find that brings you joy, peacefulness, you know. Oh, and I take a walk in the park afterwards, I feel better.
Absolutely.
Everything is more smooth.
Absolutely.
So I'm going to make that a practice, and I'm going to just set aside that time and say, this is, you know, for generating my inner peace. I'm going to walk in the park.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that's such a wonderful, I mean, especially living in Chico, we have such a wonderful park, and there's just like these old growth trees that are just like just so good. And you know, I'm a total tree hugger, and I just like, I'm just literally just like find a new tree each day. I run in the park and just like kick it, and yeah, it's just, it's beautiful. And I'll just, the one thing I'll say about that is that, you know, I usually do a morning meditation, and I have a mantra practice, and I'm kind of have the, you know, I have a morning discipline that I really stick to pretty well.
That's wonderful.
That being said, sometimes I wake up and I'm like, you know, like
time.
Yeah, you know, or something else just wants to happen. And so fortunately, I live really close to the park, so I'll hop on my bike, and it's a 5-minute ride to my favorite swimming spot, and I'll just like ride there, dip in the really amazing healing water, and then just come back, and it literally takes me like 20 minutes, you know, and like my day is just like
charged up,
is so charged up,
yeah,
and peaceful, you know, because just that little bit of time on the bike, smelling the air, just resetting before I get into work. I mean, it doesn't take a lot.
No, we're totally blessed. This particular area of Northern California. Not to make you all jealous out there listening on the internet, in the interwebs, because you can find your place. You can find it anywhere.
Absolutely.
And once you get that outer blessing, maybe from nature, then you can understand there's something actually about your nature. And even if you don't have any contact, you couldn't, you know, at that particular situation, there's ways, even through visualization, through guided imagery, very curious how our limbic mind responds to a visualized image just as palpably as a actual lived experience image. You know, from its point of view in there, it doesn't make much difference. So if I've ever been in nature, I can't get in nature, and I visualize and I put myself in that situation, you know, with my imaginal mind, I can get the same effect. There's actually the changes that go along physiologically, where I'm giving my body and my organism a good recharge. So that's the power of mental imagery. Something, you know, taking a little wade. You were describing it here, and I was going along with you. And we're going to jump in the creek and have a little brisk swim in the morning, and that's delightful.
Absolutely.
So there's capacities of our mind that we have yet to encounter. And then bit by bit, as long as we make that primary, we're again saying that's the first, that's the foremost one that we need to say is the chief, you know? Mm-hmm. Like that's in charge of what we say and what we say to ourselves silently, repeatedly, you know, recognizing those. Are they serving us? Are they not serving us? That's something we're saying internally, but it depends upon your mind. And what we say, what we intend, then becomes our physical activity.
Mm-hmm.
So the physical manifestation, the verbal manifestation, all of this, it depends upon the mind. We have to get to know this all-creating sovereign, they say. You know, if you want happiness in the life, then it starts in the mind.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a renewable resource. One's mind is always there. It's always available. And, oh, I missed up this day. I didn't get it so good. Can try again. You just pick it up. Dust yourself off. Try again.
Absolutely. Yeah, the non-reactivity has been a really important part of my process recently, because I feel like I've been stepping up to take action in a lot of ways in my life, and a lot of projects and things have been kind of flowing through me, and you know, I'm feeling this kind of almost accelerated evolution in some ways, and there's a lot of stuff that is moving right now, and it's been coupled with what feels like kind of the tendrils of fear or apprehension or the old stories that are both internally and externally trying to kind of grab my feet as I'm walking forward, you know? And a lot of it's just kind of old stuff that I've been working with for a while, and I'm just, you know, and I'm just instead of really giving much attention to it, I'm just like, okay, I recognize you're there. I recognize you're this force of learning that's been coming up in my life many times over. But right now I need to get stuff done. So I'm recognizing, and I'm continuing to move instead of, giving a lot of intention and energy to it, which for me, it's the equanimity piece is just recognizing it. Okay. I have this sensation right now. I didn't eat so well today. I'm low on energy. Okay. Mm. That's a thing. I'm going to still take my actions that I need to today, understanding that, but not letting that dictate my actions, you know? Mm. And it's whatever reason, you know, I've been at this for a little while now, but for some reason recently, it's starting to turn. It feels like I'm actually able to do that, as opposed to getting real caught up in the story, you know?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And then I hear you. I support that. The moving forward, you know. And then there's just a little challenge was coming up for me, for you, in that what seems to be holding us, that image, you know, you're walking and what's holding us, sometimes that's what needs attention.
Right.
And the spiritual warrior, we want to be like ascending, achieving. And at the same time, what we need to go through, it's like we're not going above or beyond. We're going through it.
Right.
And if we stop to look at what's that holding part, then we could have a different relationship. We could open it out. And we see that that's the ground, that's a something that, you know, is fertile. Things are coming out of it. Mm-hmm. You know, if we plant good things in that, then you cannot stop those good things coming to fruition. Mm. That type of ground, it's full of compost. It's all fertile, you know, it's ready to, so we gotta, we sometimes it's like that balance, you know, forward momentum, mind's balance with forward momentum. I say mind is like a bicycle.
Mm.
It balances better with forward momentum. But at the same time, when we have a good position of mental balance, then we can look and from a safe space, from a space of equanimity, what is it that's holding? What is, you know, that's going to be our ground that we can really work with and go through. It's like we can't get around it, can't go above it. We have to go through it. And you can. We can.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And I've been recognizing that as well, because there definitely is stuff that has come up that demands the attention. And I'm like, okay.
That's where we should put it.
Yeah. And so there are days where I literally just have to dedicate, you know, whatever amount of time it is demanded to just to be with it. Mm. I appreciate you saying that, though, because it definitely did remind me that might actually be something that is still necessary for me to address in my own personal process right now. I did. So we have about 12 minutes left. Again, you're listening to 90.1 KZFR. We've got a caller. So
what are they talking about?
I'm gonna go say hi to this caller.
Okay.
Why don't you tell us about what's coming up with your teacher coming into town?
Oh, so incredible! What an amazing resource. Always helps to keep company with the wise. And you know, I can say these things because my life has been so blessed, so eminently touched by these living examples of wisdom in action. And specifically for me, it comes from the Tibetan tradition. And one of my lineage masters is returning to Chico. His name is Chamtrul Rinpoche, Chamtrul. And he's going to be teaching here on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Amazing. This is out at the Sky Creek Dharma Center, which is our local regional meditation place out there by the airport. And all the details you can find at the skycreekdharmacenter.org. But Friday evening, Chamtrul Rinpoche is going to be teaching on the two accumulations, the two collections. And we kind of, all the stuff we've been talking about in a more offhanded way, he's going to go into in a much more practical, much more detailed way. Two collections. We were talking about ethics and ethical behavior. In the Tibetan tradition, that's called merit. It's like you actually are, you know, laying stores of blessings, which you can, you know, have your path go a little smoother with. And then also wisdom, the collection of wisdom. And we were saying how love in yourself, love in your selflessness, the idea of selflessness, the reality of selflessness can be concerning if we're only fixated on developing the strong sense of self.
Mm-hmm.
But it actually is the perfect balance to that. So that's the wisdom part of it. On Saturday, it's a more complete session, and there'll be a break. But from 10 a.m. till 4, he's going to be teaching on the four seals, which is absolutely beautiful, like the encompassing, the someone asks, what's the Buddha Dharma about?
Mm-hmm.
You could sum it up in the four seals. Understand those, you understand what Buddha was intending.
Mm.
So then also on then Sunday, he's doing a teaching on the giving and taking practice. Really, really practical. Really, really powerful, called Tonglin, giving and taking, where you put these into practice. You put all this loving energy into the service of the world, and it just happens, you know, it's like happens as automatically and as easefully as you are currently breathing. It happens with your in and out breath.
Mm-hmm.
So that's Chomcho Rinpoche's visit. It's really extraordinary. He's, you know, I met him a few years ago when I was traveling in India with my family, and far and wide, wherever we were going, people were saying, "Oh, you've got to go and get teachings from this guy. He's unbelievably so precise, you know, and authentic and accessible." That was the thing. You know, there's these high lamas, great teachers, that they become, you know, it's like hard to get the contact.
Mm-hmm.
He's very, very approachable. You can ask questions. You know, it's like amazing opportunity. Okay.
That sounds wonderful.
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
Just want to say there was a caller that was calling in. I apologize if you're ringing for a little bit. We've got about 2 minutes left if you still want to call in and share a brief word with us, 895-1114. Otherwise, we got about 2 minutes, 3 minutes left, and we're going to...
just talk about some poetry.
Talk about some poetry. Go ahead, Adam. Take us away with some words.
Sunflower... Buddha, rising high above the mountain peaks, gazing with serenity upon the fertile plains. Your love for all beings is shining freely through all of our hearts, all our families, our learning love, and lifetime after lifetime, we are aspiring to get it a little bit better.
Awesome. Thanks. I think that's perfect.
Thanks, man.
That's a good way to end it. Well, thank you all for listening to Love in the 21st Century on 90.1 KZFR Chico. And up next, we have Ecotopia, so please do not turn that dial. We've got some really awesome programming here at KZFR. I love what we've been doing. Thank you so much, Adam.
Thank you, Brian, for holding it down.
Thank you for this was wonderful. This was our first conversation together. I'm looking forward to many more.
That's right.
Absolutely. So we're going to take you out with a little bit of The Glitch Mob. This is this song is called Starve the Ego, Feed the Soul. Enjoy.
This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley.